On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 16th day of April, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And this here is what we like to call Thorn in the Side Thursday. A day reserved for that those particular brands of right-wingery that make us say, don't! Yeah, bad. And thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. We have to have these kind of check-ins because there's no air monitoring real time of the stream because we have a feedback loop from hell. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, indeed, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. If you'd like to be part of the rollicking real-time multimedia experience that is the chat room, toddle on over to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. The conversation is fine. Good evening, Labor Man. Good evening, Todd. Good evening, Jeremy and Anatole. And, of course, good evening, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, chat room moderator Sparky. Currently in his incarnation as Man Cave. He's not folding space this evening. He folded space earlier. He's enjoying the Man Cave during the spring because it'll turn into an oven here in another couple of months, if I understand correctly. So good evening, one and all, and good evening to everybody else who wanders in because we don't stand on ceremony. Folks wander by, you know, just as catch as catch can. Hey, Todd. And more folks will be by in a little bit. Maybe even you. Yes, yes, indeed. This is also, of course, a listener-supported enterprise. It's not even an enterprise. I don't think it's a shuttlecraft. Well, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Nice to have that out of the way. No, this little effort at community is entirely listener-supported. We've been trying to get out in front a little bit this week. We've got about $160 to go to finish fundraising for the week and maybe get started on next week. There's been a frenzy of bill paying. We've still got about $600 more bills to pay to keep the lupine pest off the porch. And you can participate in that by going to headonradionetwork.com/contribute and using the PayPal interface there, ignoring the more pushy, intrusive aspects of that interface. We have no control over that. That's a PayPal thing. Just get to the next screen. Oh, my goodness, it's spring. I'll be cleaning the monitor up after that one. Some sneezing going on. Yeah, I know. Ew. But if you prefer not to use PayPal, we also welcome all contributions via the U.S. Postal Service. Yes, indeed. And you can do that by sending checks or money orders to The Horn, the 103, and make them out that way, too, please, not to Bob Kincaid. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. And if you want to, send me an email to let me so I can let Boss Man Wayne know that he won't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the echo chamber that is off in the mailbox. Okay, then. 5 minutes past the hour, and this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, a little something happened yesterday that is, of course, causing much in the way of hissing in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is probably the most fraidy-cattest city on earth. I mean, it's all gunned up and policed up and police cars and semi-automatic weapons and dogs and, yeah, because, I mean, you know, terrorists. Because, you know, the terrorists all want to attack the greatest country in the world on earth. Naturally. And it's been getting a little strange in D.C. Last week, let's see, there was a shooting at the census. There was a massive power outage that we were told was caused by routine maintenance, and it was also, we were also told that it was caused by an explosion at a nearby power plant, which, curiously, was not a solar or wind power. No. Good old fossil fuels, good old antiquated grid, you know, that kind of thing. And then there was the sad and sorry incident whereby a person complaining about the excesses and oppression by the 1% committed suicide near the Capitol. Yeah. And then yesterday, having publicized the living daylights out of it so everybody knew exactly what he was doing, a man by the name of Doug Hughes, a 60-year-old postal worker, who apparently is also a devotee of light aircraft, flew what is referred to as a gyrocopter right down the mall in Washington, D.C., and landed it on the west lawn of the Capitol building with the stated intention of delivering 535, I think, whatever the number is, letters to the members of the Congress, both House and Senate, calling for them to eliminate the nastiness of Citizens United money from the political process. Again, he had highly publicized everything he was going to do. Everybody knew what was going on. Well, everybody who did things like read newspapers and, yeah. Because he'd only been talking about this for months. He'd already been visited by the Secret Service once before, or the FBI or somebody. But yesterday, he put his plan in action and flew his gyrocopter, which is, it was very frequently described as a flying bicycle, which was pretty much the same thing that Wilbur and Orville Wright's first airplane was. They were bicycle builders, after all. And he flew his gyrocopter, which looks really rather fun to fly, landed it on the west lawn of the Capitol, caused a national security sweat condition alpha hissy, and was immediately arrested before he could go and see what's that thing? Attend to his appointed rounds of delivering the mail. It was so well expected that some TV crews were actually expecting him to land on the broad, open swath, all concreted and everything, paved over on the east side of the Capitol. But had he done that, I think flying actually over the Capitol would have pushed it a little too far. Maybe that played into his thinking. NORAD spokesman John Cornelio said officials were unaware of the incident until the gyrocopter had landed, which, of course, only added to the sweat condition Alpha Hissy. The Hill, the newspaper in Washington, D.C., reached out to noted, well, he's a 33rd degree haver of hissies. They caught up with Senator Lindsey Graham down at his family's ancestral plantation home of Smoldering Chode, and asked Lindsey, who was at present in his safe room under the bed, what he thought about it all. And you know, when the for-profit media types actually do this, you know, they're just trolling. They're just punking him. Because we all know what Lindsey Graham's position is going to be. But there in the master suite on the ancestral plantation grounds of Smoldering Chode, Lindsey Graham squeaked out from under the bedstead, "He should have been subject to being shot out of the sky. I don't know why he wasn't. But our nation is under siege. Radical Islam is a threat to our homeland. There are probably radical Islamic cells in our backyard already. Somebody check the backyard here at Smoldering Chode, would you?" They're probably in our backyard already, like I was saying. And if somebody is willing to, you know, approach vital government infrastructure, they should do so at their own peril. I suppose I'm glad that man survived. He must be very brave. But still, our nation must get more serious about our national security. Hold me, John! Okay. Let's add ultralight aircraft to the list of shit that we're supposed to be scared out of our minds over. Because, you know, all we have to fear, well, never mind that FDR stuff. All we have is fear. Fear, terrible, gut-watering fear. Oh, fetch me the slop jar, John. I think I'm going to lose it again. Terrorists on gyrocopters. Radical Islam 60-year-old Florida postal workers who ain't even Islamic. See, that's how insidious the Islams are. Because, see, you can be an Islam terrorist and not even be Islam. That's how they operate. Oh, John, do hurry. I don't know how much longer I can hold it. But you're supposed to be very afraid because pretty soon Al Shish Kebab or Al Qaeda in Poughkeepsie are gonna just descend in an army of gyrocopters. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. And this time it might not be Washington D.C. This time they might
They might reduce your local Wally World to a heap of smoke and rubble. And then where will you go for your Chinese-made poisonous old Roy dog food, huh? Our very life, is under attack. Really? There's so much to worry about in America that comes from these big, strong, swarthy, rough, tough, absolutely scary Muslims. Just consider. Consider the good advice recently tendered unto the United States of America by America's rabbi, Daniel Lapin. Does that mean Daniel Rabbit in French? I thought Daniel was a cat on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Well, never mind.
Over at Washington Watch, a production of the tax-free, incredibly well-funded Family Research Council, hosted by Tony
Norman,
yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, Daniel Lapin dropped on by to warn. Lord knows they're trying to warn us, but we won't listen now, will we? Poor Lindsay's listening under the bed and everything, but goodness me. Rabbi Lapin, he knows the true nature of the threat that we face here in
the greatest country in the world on earth.
And he knows where it comes from. Tell us, Rabbi Lapin. Tell us.
All right, we were having a discussion with my good friend, Rabbi Daniel Lapin. I call him my rabbi. We were discussing why the left favors Islam and actually promotes it even to their own demise, and he was going to have a zinger of an answer for us, and we went to break, but now we're coming back. Rabbi.
Yes, hi.
Before we go any further here at 18 minutes past the hour, just a hockey puck, okay? Straight up, hockey puck. Get it? Never mind the drool. Trust me, you'd rather have that than the screaming. Yeah, a couple of loops of the duct tape. Right. Because remember, as Tony Perkins,
Norman?
Yes, Mother Bates.
Notes, it's going to be a zinger. Not a ho-ho. Not a fruit pie. Not a king dong.
Hi.
A zinger.
Yes, hi.
You were going right into the answer when we went to the break, so pick right up.
Yes, well, there's a sexual dimension to this, and by that I just want to explain, it doesn't necessarily mean a man, a biological man, or a biological woman. Well, I see.
Wait, what? No, this is Lindsay under the bed. What? No, do tell, what? I don't care if they're discussing ice cream cones and sprinkles. I don't care if the right wing are discussing motor oil. There's always going to be a sexual dimension to it. You know? Yeah. Hockey puck.
Think about masculinity or femininity. Give you an example. If my wife says to me, Daniel, you are not going to the wedding dressed like that.
And at that moment, he feels terribly,
terribly infuriated because there he is, standing there in his little Speedo and his little tank top undershirt, and he says, well, why ever not? For instance, if my wife says, if I say to my, given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live underwater, no. My wife will conclude, not that all mackerel live underwater, but that if she buys kippers that will not rain, or that trout live in trees, and even that I do not love her anymore. It just comes in handy sometimes, you know? But then, no, okay, so we're going to talk, I don't know how it is that Muslims are affecting how we dress to go to weddings, but I'm not in charge of the right-wing brain, so let's go back and try to make some sense of this, if that is at all possible.
A biological man or a biological woman. When I think about masculinity or femininity, give you an example. If my wife says to me, Daniel, you are not going to the wedding dressed like that, and I say, yes, dear, or are you really sure about that, dear, then what's really happening is that for that little interchange, she is more masculine than me.
You could not pay me. Assuming that there was one. Let's say somebody put one of those little teeny tiny cameras in the Lappin bedroom. You could not pay me to watch it. Although I'm sure that there might be a lot of Republicans out there who would probably pay right darn good money to do so. I mean, after all, people like Rabbi Lappin and, you know, Tony,
yes, Mother Bates?
Well, they spend an awful lot of time checking out the sexual dimensions of gay men. As you could probably figure out if you could get a good look at their browser history. HotMilitaryStudsForYou.com. Yeah, you remember Jimmy Jeff Ganny Guck, right? Jeff Gannon, Talon News Service, who was actually the face of hot gay military studs for you. It routinely got into the Bush White House. Remember that? Yeah. There was so much back there. There's just so much that it's easy to forget. But I try not to. Talon News. So if your wife tells you that you cannot wear the skin diving suit to the wedding, she's actually being masculine. And the next thing you know, she's going to be giving you a dirty Sanchez. Well, yeah, I think a lot of us are, Marty. Marty says, I'm trying to understand the part of the question about the left being in favor of radical Islam. Yeah, me too, because, see, I don't remember, I'm part of the left. What left? Ah! I mean, I'm probably more liberal than 99.9% of the country is. And I just don't remember getting the agenda item about promoting radical Islam, especially given my general hostility to organized religion. Promote? What are we throwing a concert? A benefit? A monster Muslim truck pull? Tractors? And in this corner of the really dirty pit here at the Barton Civic Center, it's the Big Sheik. Right? Yeah. With opening act, the Happy Goodman Family. Now, I don't think we're promoting. But anyway, back to Daniel. Daniel in the Perkins Den. and all this business about what he can't wear to a wedding. Why was that the example? And, you know, about how I wouldn't want to go home if I were Daniel Lappin and be confronted by my wife talking. So, you told him on the radio that I'm masculine. Thank you so much. You blend.
She's expressing a very firm and non-negotiable position. I'm being more submissive. I'm saying, you know what, she probably knows better than me about how people are dressing for this wedding, so that's all we do.
They can't help it, can they? Everything has to be framed in sexual terms. She's being dominant, he's being submissive. She's going to determine what he wears to the wedding. You have no idea the amount of cheap humor that I'm trying to avoid right now, because I'm trying to be a better person. I really am. I am. I'm trying to be a much better person. I am. She's being firm. Oh, do be firm with me some more, Deirdre. Show me your firmness, dear. But see, that's because we liberals have filthy minds, and they can't even talk about anything like that, like masculine women, without us making dirty jokes. How did I get past the whole Lindsey Graham thing without saying, "Shut up and go and change your armor"?
When people are in a hostage situation, we have something called Stockholm Syndrome.
Wait a minute. He did not just segue out of a story about his wife being firm with him into describing hostages. Yes, he did, really. He did. And I think the goddess of irony probably just did a spit take onto her universal monitor. Don't go home, Rabbi. The little woman is not going to be amused. I mean, dear God, is he going home every night and working on his own version of, I don't know, 50 Shades of Wingnut? And then she said, no, I'm trying to be a better person. Going to be a better person.
Mm-hmm. And what that means, obviously, is that, needless to say, even if you're biologically male, if you're, God forbid, in a hostage situation, you are somewhat feminized simply because you are powerless.
These goddamn false dichotomies are going to be the end of us, you know that? So if you've been taken hostage, just wait a damn minute. There's only one person out there who incarcerates people and puts men in panties that I know of, and that's Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona. Ay, ay, ay. So apparently what we can glean from this, and we've still got a little ways to go, I got to tell you, what we've gleaned from this so far is that Rabbi Lappin likes it when his wife is firm with him, and he's apparently got a BDSM kink? Fantasizing about hostage situations and men being feminized by big, burly, muscular, hot, sweaty, swarthy, hostage-taker pirates? Yar! You ever wonder if Rabbi Lappin and Lindsey Graham run across each other on in chat rooms and never even know it?
Tell me more about the hostages, Rabbi. I mean, Tony says you're his rabbi, but can you be my rabbi too? Can you be my rabbi and come on down here to Smoldering Chode and tell me all about about how your wife is so firm and about the Stockholm syndrome you get and how feminine you feel when them big burly swarthy sweaty nasty Muslim hostage taking pirates is being mean to you? Come on down here. John, have you met the Rabbi John?
You are dependent on your captors for almost everything, and so there's a slight feminizing process that takes place. It's just violent.
It's just slight. It's a slight feminizing process. You know, maybe a little bit of clear polish on the toenails. You know, right? But it's under your dress socks, so no one ever need notice. Slight.
It's just real. And, I mean, you know, there are countless studies showing that feminine-type behavior produces an excess of estrogen in men and vice versa.
Oh, my God! Really? An excess of estrogen production in men?
Okay, biologically, and I'll rely on people with far greater expertise than me for this, but I know that women, being insofar as, all precious little fetuses start out in the womb female. We understand that, right? But women have the ability to produce both estrogen and testosterone, as well as a whole host of other hormones, and it is that little Y chromosome, when that little sucker kicks in the precious little fetuses, well, that causes mommy to just flood the fetus in testosterone and get all male-y. Men, on the other hand, while we produce a lot of hormones, we don't have a great big capacity for cranking out estrogen unless something goes wrong. Hormone. And, of course, if something does go wrong hormonally, the right wing wants to make sure that those people can't go to the bathroom where they go to the bathroom.
It gets so confusing.
But apparently, if you are taken hostage by a hot, sweaty, nasty, swarthy Muslim pirate, be still my heart. John! Well, then you start cranking out estrogen, and the next thing you know, you're walking around wearing high-heel shoes singing, "I Feel Pretty." At least according to Rabbi Lappin. Note coming in from Steve in China. Bob, stand-up comedian and old-school Freudian all at once. Seems to me this rabbi missed his true vocation. And is it just me, or isn't there something suspiciously gay about this guy's accent? Wink, wink. I mean, kind of like he's a little envious of what some men have, comparing sword lengths and all that jolly good sport. Hey, what? Sylvia pointing out, she says, Bob, I loved when you were talking about Lindsey Graham's ancestral home, but, oh, you mean Smoldering Chode? But since he comes from the planter culture, maybe it should be incestual culture? Well, or maybe, yeah. Marty says, that banging you're no doubt hearing is me giving myself a rather large migraine over this so-called America's rabbi. So you haven't taken the hockey puck out, right? Good. Because there's a right smart bit more of this. After all, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. So I don't want us to get off track. I don't want us to get lost. When last we heard from America's rabbi, which is probably going to take no small number of actual real taking their faith seriously rabbis by a bit of surprise, and I mean all the way from the hardcores down to the barbecue eating reformers. Yeah, it's about the estrogen. Wait, I got to do this before we go back to Reverend Lappin. Hold on. There it is. Okay, bumper ready. Hey, where's my damn computer? Wow, some of your tabs were refreshed to apply an Internet Explorer Flash player update. Thanks, Bill! All right, so we're going to have we'll have to sort it. No, but I think we can, because we're multi-talented multitaskers here, right? Yeah. So when last we checked in, apparently if you get taken hostage by a hot, dark, sweaty, oily, swarthy, really, really scary Muslim hostage taker, well, you're going to start cranking out estrogen. My goodness gracious. It's like puberty.
All right, we'd obviously say is that this is a slight feminizing process that takes place. It's just biology. It's just real. And, I mean, you know, there are countless studies showing that feminine-type behavior produces an excess of estrogen in men and vice versa. So all I'm saying here is that that essentially the left has fallen in love.
What, Edith?
So it's a biological fact that feminine behavior produces estrogen in men. Okay. I guess. So does that mean that the production of estrogen in men who are hostages is a survival response? And that therefore men who display feminine traits are more likely to survive? Oh, Mr. Darwin, is there something about natural selection we should be learning from this? That if you act all big and butch and manly and burly and swarthy towards your big butch manly swarthy captors, that you had it right all along, Lindsay. Okay. We're halfway through.
That essentially the left has fallen in love with the masculinity of Islam. You know.
I'll be damned. Here I am on the left, and I mean, okay. I mean, I've seen Lawrence of Arabia, and you know. Omar Sharif is an okay-looking guy in there, but, I mean, it's not anything that really... I wasn't made that way. But the left has fallen in love with the masculinity of...
What's he trying to say? That Christianity's a bunch of sissies? That the Pope is a girly man? That, I mean, what's he saying about his own faith?
If Islam is gall-danged masculine. I mean, you know, I mean, they got their beards and they don't shave and they probably go out in the desert and sit around and scratch each other and fart. You know, it's just like a clubhouse at a country club. This guy is so trying to use sexual epithets against progressive people, or for that matter, anybody who dares disagree with him. He can hardly stand it. It's kind of like how the right wing has spent the last 7 years itching to scream that word at President Obama, to the point that sometimes it actually sneaks out and you wind up with Rick Santorum talking about blah people. Mm-hmm. Didn't Rick also use the word nig? Yeah. So there we were, just a few seconds ago. There we were with Rabbi Lappin explaining to us that we had a big old man crush on the Muslims.
That essentially the left has fallen in love with the masculinity of Islam. You know, going back in America to the days of, you remember the Waltons, that wonderful TV show?
I do.
That was a masculine time in America.
I admit, I'm trying real hard to hang on to the thread of this conversation, if we can call it that these two lunatics are having. But we've gone from great, big, scary, masculine, sweaty, Muslim hostage takers to John Boy? The Depression was a very masculine time in America? When millions of men left their families in a desperate attempt to go and find work, leaving the women to hold the family together? That was masculine? All those men came home to find their wives twirling handlebar mustachios? John Boy was butch?
Going back in America to the days of, you remember the Waltons, that wonderful TV show?
I do.
And it was wonderful. God, this is like being lectured by Terry Thomas.
That was a masculine time in America. You think of who our heroes were. You think of the kind
John
of persons
Wayne.
We looked for. We were looking for masculine type people.
The first guy Tony Perkins can come up with for 1932 is John Wayne? John Wayne wasn't... His star really hadn't risen by then, had it? I mean, we're more in the Gary Cooper, Douglas Fairbanks era, aren't we? Oh wait. See, I think we're learning a little more about Rabbi Lappin right now. Wouldn't this be the era when Rudolph Valentino, you know, the Sheik, was such a little heartthrob?
We weren't looking for metrosexual. And Dad in the Waltons was a strong masculine type, and that was what we looked up to. Today, after a 30 or 40 year epidemic.
Wait. Okay, we're about to talk about the 30 or 40 year epidemic, probably of gayness or something. But, excuse me. Isn't this guy judging American culture by TV shows? I mean, I understand art imitates life, yes. but it's still not reality. And I think, generally speaking, we can observe that the right wing in this country has signed the final papers on its divorce from reality. Consider, in 2 minutes and 20 seconds, we have gone from Rabbi Lapin's wife telling him he cannot wear the stunning cocktail frock to the wedding, and being very firm about it, to hostages becoming mincing sissies before great, sweaty, Muslim, swarthy, butch hostage takers, and now he's got the hots for Pa Walton. I mean, think about John Boy. John Boy was kind of a narrow-hipped, narrow-shouldered, thin, waifish, scholarly, effete writer type. Maybe Rabbi Lapin wish, because, see, we do have this on the right-wing side. Remember, Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal, he took the name Bobby, which is in no wise part of his actual name, because he fantasized about being Bobby Brady. Mm-hmm. So I'm beginning to wonder if Rabbi Lapin is fantasizing about being the nibbish, bookish John Boy and getting a firm, feminizing spanking from Pa Walton.
Of leftism that has swept its sordid stain throughout America, a 30 or 40 year epidemic of leftism that has swept its sordid stain throughout America would become much more feminized. And we are attracted to the masculine strength and brutality of Islam.
Yeah, you know what? I was just watching some Muslim brutality on the electric TV box the other day. I was watching some of them ISIL people blow up priceless 5,000-year-old cultural artifacts in the ancient city of Nimrud, and I mean it got me all hot and bothered in my lady place. I admit it. I mean they showed this ignorant, barely literate. Made Jethro Bodine look like a goddamn rocket scientist jackass with a sledgehammer in his hand going after a piece of carving that has survived the whole of human history for the last 5,000 years until, you know, these assholes got hold of. And I mean, I sat there and I thought, Jesus Christ, he is hot. Honest to God, these people need to be chased down with a butterfly fucking net, don't they? Oops, there was the word. Okay, thank you for the historical update. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, in 1932, Marion Morrison was still a member of the Thundering Herd having sex parties at Tallulah Bankhead's house in the Hollywood Hills. Marion Morrison being, of course, the kind of feminine name of the Duke, John Wayne. Surely this man was the son of God. Emilio noting by email, subject line, curing the gay. Come on, Bob. Everybody knows you cure the gay by putting men to do manly things and not feminine things. Strong, burly men in close contact with each other, their bodies pressed together in manly contact. Passing a ball back to one another between their legs. That cures the gay. Emilio signs off saying, take care. Oh, you too, Emilio, you too. Sweaty men. close contact. There she blows! Okay, we don't have that much left of Rabbi Lappin, and I gotta admit, at this point in time, I'm gonna be sad to see this end. I haven't had this much fun since Senator Craig got caught in the men's basement men's room of the Minneapolis International Airport tapping his toes. Of course, he had a wide masculine stance, didn't he? Thank you for the confirmation, Michael in Madison. Says, indeed, Bob, his frothiness did indeed call POTUS a nig, an anti-war government nig, to be precise. I thought I remembered. Yeah, let's check in. Shall we? Yeah.
It is why he proposes the bills he proposes. It is why he whispered. Off camera, he thought. Say, just give me a little space. We'll take care of this after the election. We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was a source for division around.
He said it, not me. The anti-war government nig. Marty noting, you know the extraterrestrials will be judging our societies from our television shows, and they won't have any context. I know, Marty. It's a Galaxy Quest reference. Well, I mean, like Gilligan's Island.
Those poor people.
Yeah. All right, we can do this. I think. If we have to.
The girl in the high school being attracted to the bad, tough guy. And that's really what's happening. There's no other way I know of to explain this utterly irrational. And as soon as I said to myself it's irrational, I said to myself, yeah, where else do you see irrational behavior?
Sandy!
When people are sexually attracted, you see irrational behavior. And so I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not talking about homosexual,
I'm not
biological, but on a spiritual level, the feminized American left, show business, politicians, particularly academia, all the people who love Islam.
That's
because show business, academia, politicians, they are. They're all the people who love Islam. Every last one of them. Universal affirmative, all that. Feminized. Yeah, you reckon Rabbi Lappin's ever met Lindsey Graham?
Christianity and Judaism are exactly the reverse.
That's interesting.
We are strength with compassion. We understand the values. We know where yes is yes and no is no. But above all, we threaten leftist hegemony in the United States of America.
Really? Us leftists? We done got us some hegemony? Why didn't I get the memo? That was probably all that time I was spending thinking about those hot, sweaty, swarthy, great, big, muscular, hairy, bearded, yummy Muslim pirates.
If there is a great Christian revival in this country, for which I, Tony, devoutly pray.
Okay. Time for a members of the tribe check-in, please. Children of Israel, need a little help here. When's the last time you heard a rabbi saying that he prays for a Christian revival in the United States? I mean, really. Aren't your average garden variety Christian revivals kind of tough on the children of Israel? I mean, don't you wind up with pogroms and holocausts and shit like that? Fleeing across borders, being driven out of countries. Yeah, I think history supports my position. But then again, I'm feminized.
The nest is finished, and that's what they fear.
Yeah. Interesting concept, and I agree with you. It's fascinating.
Fascinating, Captain. Yeah. This is just... Ron and Raleigh. He called this rambling crap a zinger? Man, I'm still trying to figure out how he built his house of cards. Very masculinely, Ron. Very masculinely. Mother. So we've reached the end of the filibuster. So, the phone lines are open. I mean, if you can work up enough of a hormone to sashay over to the telephone, you feminized male liberals. And what does that mean for female liberals? I'm having a problem here. Yeah, I don't know. Is Rabbi Lappin a Jew for Jesus? And as some famous comedian once noted, isn't that like being a rock and roller against drugs? So, yeah, let's take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio, and I want to thank our good friend Ed for jumping out there, Ed from Ohio, and helping take the fundraising down to $110. That's pretty big. Thank you very kindly, Ed. Hopefully, some folks will jump in with you. And we can get an early start on next week. I'm looking around here. I admit there was a little bit. I was a little bit otherwise discombobulated for a second. I was looking to see where our because it's Thursday. Where is our green news report? But I don't see it anywhere. Oh, well, that's fine. Maybe it'll pop during the break. Like I said, this is listener-supported conversation radio. I am proud of this bumper. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Let's go, girls. Going out tonight, I'm feeling all right. Gonna let it all hang out. Wanna make some noise, really raise my voice. Yeah, I wanna scream and shout. No inhibitions, make no conditions. Yeah.
like I said, I'm proud of that bumper. Because I've just got this mental image of Rabbi Lappin dancing around his bedroom, singing into his hairbrush. Yeah. Shania Twain, of course. I'll tell you what, let's run over to the Herald line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you doing?
I don't know. I'm feeling kind of silly this evening, I think.
Well, it's kind of fun. I'm just moseying, I mean really moseying through Dallas, Houston right now. I mean, Fort Worth. God damn, all the same. But your conversation kind of reminded me of back in about 10 years ago when CVs were still kind of heavy in use. It was so common. Say after sundown, you'd always get some joker on the damn CB radio who would keep whispering on the radio for hours on end, "I ain't got no panties on." And it was like the biggest, funnest thing. Everybody would look at, okay, who's doing this? We gotta find this person. And of course, you get all the crazy people get just, "Hey, Sam, find it some stuff. Got a family with the ass on the radio. We gotta find him, whoop his ass." No end of fun. But your little story kind of reminded me of those.
Well, you know what I got to thinking about? It's this, John. You know that in the United States military, women now fly combat missions. I wonder how one of those truly badass women who, say, sit behind the stick of an incredible array of hovering death in, say, a Black Hawk helicopter bearing down on one of those big, hot, swarthy, bearded, sexy men that Mr. Lappin was talking about. I wonder how she'd feel to hear this. Or maybe one of those women who sits behind the stick of a supersonic jet fighter getting ready to rain down death and destruction on all of those masculine Muslims. I wonder what she'd think of that, John.
How if we take his theory for a couple of seconds, we were to put some kind of weight behind it, then the women would be the reverse of men. They were acting like men, and therefore their testosterone would become so amazingly potent, and I don't think it would bother them one bit if we were to take his theory and put a little weight behind it. Because if the men were getting more feminine because they were acting at their estrogen was promoting because of their acting like females, if by his theory, if those women sit behind the stick of a $50 million fighter with enough firepower to take out a small village, oh man, she'd probably be growing a penis by that time. That's just taking his theory, but I don't, but if you just imagine.
Oh, indeed. I don't know. I mean, like I said, if this makes men all estrogenized, does that mean that the women are all tacking up old pictures of Betty, old World War II pinups of Betty Grable?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is taking it even further than he probably intends, but if he's talking like that and take his theory and run it to its full extent, then he's kind of in a backhanded sort of way, and this is my perception, you can take it or leave it, but he's kind of in a backhanded sort of way admitting that the sexuality and the sexes are not immutable. They're not necessarily permanent. And we see that, of course, with transgenders and stuff. If you take the right chemicals and what have you, you can grow breasts or shrink them or whatever. So, you know, maybe that's where he's going with that, is that, you know, you begin to take on the attributes of the sex that you're most portraying. That's my guess in it, maybe. I don't know.
Well,
a scary thought by his eyes, but, you know, hey.
Oh. I,
weird.
Well, this is a weird bunch. I mean, they can't. They are so sexed up. Everything the right wing considers has got to have some sexy time in it, or they can't wrap their minds around it. And I think that has something to do, John, not trying to be too overt, but I think it has something to do with the fact that they spend a lot of time with their hands wrapped around something else.
Well, I mean, answer a question for me, because you actually probably saw if it was on video or audio or whatever. You thought, is this guy a British or European guy or something?
Oh, yes,
like that?
Yes. He's a British rabbi, and he's come over to the he's come over to the colonies because, you know, he can make ever so much more money. The hustle is ever so much better here, and the libel laws aren't nearly as stringent.
That's true, but it occurred to me listening to the guy. I said, you know, I've known multiple people from you know, Britain and England and stuff like that, and you know, all you got to do is you know, watch a few little bit of the old Benny Hill and what have you to know that they're pretty you know, what's a polite word to say? They're a pretty wired up bunch there on the island. About sex anyway.
Well, let's remember, this was a culture that was so hung up that during Shakespeare's time, can you imagine John being in the in the audience, maybe in for tuppence or whatever down among the groundlings, watching the world premiere of Romeo and Juliet, where Juliet was played by a prepubescent male?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was against the law for women to be actresses during that time frame.
Right. Because back during that time frame, wasn't if I got this wrong, I don't think I do, the church was actually in charge of the brothels.
No, there was hell. Now I'm only digging in my rotted spiderwebby brain, but
yeah,
The
church ran the brothels over across the Thames, which I think was the same side of the the wrong side of the river as the Globe Theater and the Rose.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, that the even to become an actor or in the very late part period when women did manage to finally start breaking into the what they call the profession. Being an actor, or what they later would call actresses, actually, you were a prostitute, and you had to get a special dispensation from the church, or you were excommunicated, or once the Anglican church became, you know, really entrenched, their version of it was the same thing. I mean...
Yeah, maybe it was when the Roman Catholic Church was... before the Reformation, but
yeah, it was during that gray period. There's some
scholasticism, some work that has been done that suspects that the object of Shakespeare's sonnets may have been a very, very pretty young man with a taste for clothing.
Hmm.
Yeah, in fact, our buddy Jim just checked in by email. He said, church brothels, affirmative.
Yeah, that was fairly well known, because it was one of the ways that the church has paid off their the debt that had been accrued during the property transfers and all the weird crap that was going on back then. But yeah, I mean, actors and the actors and everything like that, they were, you know, in some parts of society, they actually were lower down in the pecking order than you know, street women. You know what would later, a couple centuries later, be called, you know, like the Whitechapel area and everything, and all the dregs of society and everything that end up there, and all the working women and the working girls, as they were referred to. I mean, you know, actors, you know. They're celebrated only during the time when, or what was the saying they had? I'm loved when the lights are burning, and detested when the lights go out. I think it's something, some version thereof. And that was very much true. I mean, read some of the works of Oscar Wilde and some of the letters he wrote about, you know, the later part, even though it's considerably past that period of Shakespeare, but the attitude of actors and stuff like that was still pretty low on the totem pole, even, you know, even in the late, you know, in the late 1800s and 1700s, was very low down. So yeah, it's always, the British people have always been very closeted and repressed, and it, you know, and I'm not saying it to be mean or nothing, but hell, we Americans are, we've picked up the mantle of prudishness and, you pack that stuff in, and sooner or later it's gonna pop out, and I got a feeling this guy here is doing pretty much that. All his little things are, you know, they come out in his language, you know. And you're right, the right wing is very, very retarded when it comes to the human condition. They don't like it. They don't like the fact that people have lust or desires or things like that. It makes them very uncomfortable.
And, well, let's put it this way. These are the same people who have a hissy if there's a TV show that shows a couple of guys kissing.
Yeah.
And meantime, they're sitting around, them. You know, what are you going to do?
That's, you know, these guys, you know, you got it right. This guy comes over here and he gets paid these nice little chunks of money for doing these little wackadoodle interviews. And he, you know, pontificates a bunch of stuff that, you know, it doesn't mean anything because, you know, it's just an interview. It's entertainment. And, so he comes up with this wacky crap, and the only people that are listening to him on that Perkins show is the same people who are like little bobbleheads. They just, yep, that's what he says, because their audience has already been filtered out of anybody who might say otherwise. So it doesn't matter what the guy says. He can talk whatever babbling drivel he wants.
More than anything else, though, I think what this tells us is that we are in for a whole lot of misogyny between now and November 2016 and possibly November 2020 and maybe November 2024.
Yeah, well, if we make it that far, because part of the reason I called, and it's not so much change of subject, but did you catch what the royal screwing that the Congress gave us today?
Oh, the TPP agreement?
Yeah, that's I thought I'd mention, see if you had any thoughts on it.
Well, supposedly this has, I don't like the TPP under any set of circumstances, but the fact of the matter is, I think it's one of those things that they're going to shove through hell or high water because, I mean, at least that's what the New York Times article I saw today intimated. Apparently, we're supposed to be placated because there is language in there about human rights.
Yeah, extremely
human rights
language.
Yeah, the New York Times describes it as a human rights negotiating objective that has never existed in trade agreements, also making any final trade agreement public for 60 days before the president signs it, up to 4 months before Congress votes. But Congress's hands are still tied on it. Congress gets the power to vote on the TPP, but it doesn't get any opportunity to amend. And you know what?
Right,
with this Congress, I understand that much of it.
Well, it's
because
the part that bothers me is it reflects something off one of your pet things about the whole mountaintop removal stuff. I had a conversation this morning with a not so good friend of mine, who's a big proponent for this stuff, but. I had mentioned to him about, what about things like mountaintop removal and stuff? And if, say, And because, you know, you talk about the ATAC and how you want to get this thing passed where they would put a barring on mountaintop removal. And he explained to me, and when he finished explaining it, there wasn't a hockey puck around that could stand up what I was biting. Because his short version of it is he says that if the TPP were to go into place as it has been projectedly put forth in the parts and pieces that have been leaked out, if even the United States itself were to pass the AIC Act, the AIC Act would then be subject to an international tribunal lawsuit for the loss of revenues and profits from multinational coal companies. And I'm going, well, holy smack and bone with baloney there. I mean, you're saying that any laws that any local, state, or even federal that passes that would be contradictory to corporate interests would then be subject to international lawsuit? And he goes, yep. And that's what kind of sparked me to call it, because I was like, damn it, that's going to damn near make it so that even if you get the AIC Act passed.
I have not studied the constitutional ramifications of it. Devin just sent me a message saying that AIC is a dead letter under TPP or TTIP. I'm not so sure of that. Because
that's, like I said, that's what the guy was telling me this morning. It was like, that's because, you know, like I said, I've been listening to you guys for about solidly for 6 months or so now, and I've picked up that's a pretty big issue with you, and I looked into it a little bit, and then that's why, you know, in the course of our conversation, I brought it up to him, and I said, well, what about things like the AIC Act and what have you? And he said, those things are going to be harder to pass if this trade agreement goes through, because then all these things like the AIC Act would have to be measured against the treaty obligations of the TPP, and that would make it significantly harder. Even if you could get it passed, you'd have to put in some type of exclusionary language to try to offset the inevitable lawsuits that would come in from loss of profits and increased expenses for regulatory, any type of regulation that's passed to mitigate. And the example he gave to me was, and it's a version of this has already popped up in NAFTA, in one of the trade deals with NAFTA. There's a company that's apparently based in Mexico but does construction work down in Vegas, and Vegas has what are called dust control laws. And the city council passed a lot of these, try to cut down the dust and everything that gets kicked up during construction. And so the construction company, they passed a lot of laws, and they have to use a lot of water trucks to try to keep the dust down. Well, apparently, this was cutting into the profits of this multinational company that was attached to some type of construction project going on in Vegas, and they took the city to court. And what? Under the provisions of a trade deal, and the city had to pay or make some type of revision in their laws to try to accommodate that, because under federal law, treaties are laws of the land. So that's probably the reason I sparked the call today, because I thought maybe I'd ask you to see what you thought about it.
But wouldn't the company have to be an actual overseas company?
Not the way that the TPP has been projected to be out. It's any company and its subsidiaries are considered singular.
Because
while
international finance banks like Deutsche Bank and Royal Bank of Scotland, whatnot, may finance this stuff, they don't actually own the companies. I mean, Alpha Natural Resources, all 90 cents a share of it or whatever it is right now, is an American corporation.
Yeah, maybe, but but like I said, the way it was explained to me was that, however, the legal, again, this is something I know nothing about. I know next to nothing about it, but from my understanding, that wouldn't necessarily hold up, because the loss of the investment that would be the rationale for the lawsuit. So if somebody invested in an American company and that American company was forced to incur additional expenses or otherwise costs of regulatory or environmental, that is one of the big pushes, of course, was the environmental thing. But the way it was described to me is that any costs, regulations, and or direct or indirect that are suffered by these companies could be taken and placed under tribunal for reimbursement. And, you know, like I said, by the time I got off the phone with him, I was like, this is terrible. I mean, they've been leaking stuff like this for the last 6 or 7 months about this stuff, just the bits and pieces about intellectual property and what have you, but that's bad enough, you know. But if this other stuff is actually going into play...
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to sit down and do what I can to read what there is of it.
Yeah, I tried a little bit of it. I tried to read some of it this afternoon after I talked to this not-so-good friend of mine. But I got to, you know, like I said, I did some digging around, and the majority of the stuff that's out there, the interview they did with Schumer today about it, was Schumer or one of the other guys, Wynn, I think it was. One of the senators was just having a cow because...
Well, Ron Wyden was being the fly in the ointment.
Yeah, I think it might have been him, but he was complaining that his staffer has clearances high enough to go into CIA meetings about the freaking Iran nuclear deal and stuff, and he was pitching a bitch about... My guy has the clearances to go in and deal with almost anything in the government, from CIA, nuclear, Iran deals, everything, but these people in this freaking TPP tell me he doesn't have a high enough clearance. And he was just having an absolute button-munching cow about it, from what I gather. And, but what bothered me was, you know, these guys are all fussing and complaining about the whole damn thing, but they all voted for it to pass. And that's what, like I said, that was kind
well, one of
really
the things. One of the things that I think is going to be quite fascinating out of all of this is the question of where Hillary Clinton will fall on it. Because
yeah,
I remember the 90s when every labor organization under the sun told Bill Clinton that NAFTA would be a disaster for working people. And, of course, you know, he was smarter than everybody else. Said, no, it won't. Well, of course it was. And, you know, vast swaths of the American economy packed up and left.
Yeah, they had a fairly interesting conversation today on the Rachel Maddow show, or was it or last night? I heard it today because I listened to it on podcast. They had a fairly stiff little conversation about Bernie Sanders and about how in the last couple, 3 days, Hillary has made multiple statements about trying to do something about the money in elections, and it wasn't talked about during the podcast that I was listening to, but in the follow-ups that I was watching later today, they were sitting there looking at the hypocrisy, because here she is talking about, well, we need to do something about all this, you know, all this money in politics and blah, and maybe we need a constitutional amendment, which brought me back to thinking about Dr. Bill. I'm going, wow, now Hillary Clinton's talking about constitutional amendments. How deep is this crap going? And then I finished up some of my research and then found out that earlier today, Alice Walton of the Walton clan donated a vast chunk of money to Hillary's PAC.
I have no doubt. I mean, they've been fast friends for good God since the late 80s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I'm just saying, I mean, I'm like going, wait a minute. I mean, talk about hypocrisy. This woman's talking about trying to get money out of the politics, and then, oh, thank you for this large check you just handed me. You're so wonderful. Thank you. Hugs and kisses. Anyway, I apologize. I think maybe I might have drifted your conversation off today, but from its original subject matter, but it's fascinating, all of it. And I will let you go back to beating the snot out of whoever it is you want to beat out of today.
John, I appreciate it. Thank you very kindly, and you have a good evening, and Well, mosey safely.
Oh, see, I think I drove 3 miles since our conversation started, so I'm in no hurry.
Oh, joy. You know, what's your mileage at idle like that?
3 feet a gallon, I think.
Nice. Lovely.
It's not that bad, but no, it's all right. But anyway, I'll let you go and, maybe put some food for thought for a future program.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. I will look into it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's our buddy John from out on the road. Both lines open now, I think. Yeah. Wait a minute. You there? No. So both lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, and that's easy, too. And worldwide, no toll charges, right? You can get an idea of who's been greased where, because in the New York Times story about the TPP, it states as follows. Mr. Orrin Hatch, Senator Hatch, called the deal the most powerful tool in Congress's trade arsenal to secure, quote, some of the most ambitious trade agreements in our nation's history. Well, okay. No. So there probably is a screwing in our future. I want to backtrack for a minute to the original topic, sort of. To wit, we're going to have a sickening degree of misogyny flowing like a mighty sewer for the next several months and maybe next several years. Every bit of racist hatred that the right wing focused on Barack Obama, they're going to almost instantaneously transform into misogyny relative to Hillary Clinton. I am not talking about whether or not Hillary Clinton is the great hope of the Democratic Party, whether she should be president. I'm not talking about her policy positions. But we're going to see the ongoing nastiness of the right wing, because really, it's all they got. Let us take Two Wit as an example, because they're crawling out of the damn woodwork. Let's run down to CVS DFW in Dallas and check out this story that kind of caught a little fire in the last day or so. We'll just go to the package from DFW, because why not?
Female shouldn't be president. That is a direct quote from a North Texas woman's Facebook post today.
And now it is getting some national attention. Steve Bickett asks why she doesn't think a woman can lead our country, and he has her answer all new at 6.
My name is Cheryl Rios, and I am the CEO of Go 8 Marketing.
She runs her own business, raises a family.
Unfriending, wow.
But Cheryl Rios's Facebook post has raised eyebrows.
I could have deleted it, but it stands true. I believe in what I said. There is an old-fashioned, biblical...
And what she said was that if Hillary wins the presidency, she's moving to Canada. You know, from that liberal enclave, Texas. Hit the bricks, sister. But she wants us to understand that she doesn't just not want a woman president because she woke up thinking that. This is a considered position.
Business raises a family.
Unfriending, wow.
But Cheryl Rios's Facebook post has raised eyebrows.
I could have deleted it, but it stands true. I believe in what I said. There is an old-fashioned, biblical, sound reasoning in my mind of why a woman should not be president.
Don't you someday want to see a woman president of the United States of America?
It started with her opposition to Hillary Clinton as a presidential possibility. But she went well beyond a political position. A president, she says,
should always be a man.
I, Cheryl Rios, does not believe a woman should be president.
I does
We're
not.
We're built differently. We do have different hormones, and we do. And in the world that we live in, I understand that there's equal rights. And
again, with the hormones, we have different hormones. I know. It probably goes without saying, but you know, World War II was not started by a PMSE woman. I mean, it's kind of like all them those women flying combat missions in the Middle East, assuming there are some. It kind of makes you wonder. I mean, does she really need a $50 million supersonic fighter jet? How about we just wait till she's got PMS and hand her a Swiss Army knife and just let her go and finish it off? Because, you know, the women's is that way. You know, they get that way. Or, as Robert A. Heinlein once put it, for 7 days a month, a woman acts like a man acts all the time.
And that's a wonderful thing, and I support all of that. I don't support a woman being president.
A Stroker's Dallas is a motorcycle shop, a bar and grill, a tattoo parlor. And
testosterone is in no small supply in Rick Fearless's Stroker's Dallas custom motorcycle shop.
Goddess of irony, Strokers.
No problem. It'll be done.
And he depends on Rios' marketing skills for that shop. But he cannot understand her stand on women running a nation.
And I can't comprehend somebody that thinks that a woman can't do anything that a man can do. They can. I promise you they can.
Running my own business, I know sitting across from a man, you're going to be looked at a certain way. Do we want that in our presidency? By no means, no.
Yeah, okay. Because, you know, the she might have some hormones, and there goes the neighborhood. So that's one idiot in Dallas. Where do these idiots get their ideas? Hey, we haven't heard from the Savage Wiener in a while.
Ah, the Savage Wiener.
So why don't we? Like I said, it's going to be a long way to November 2016. And if she wins, it's going to... Oh, they're going to lose their minds. Wow, okay, that's... Well, they don't have any minds to lose. You get my meaning.
But now she's the nice one, and the TV ad shows her with gay couples, and like that's the most important thing on earth, is the happy gay couple. And she's hitting the road to earn a vote. Hasn't driven a car in 20 years, but she's one of us, a pancake woman. Well, I can look at it. The pantsuits with... I don't want to go into the weight thing. That's not fair.
Of course, the only reason you bring that up is if... I mean, you know, if you're the Savage Wiener...
Savage!
If you're going to bring it up. Stay classy, Michael. It's a good time to remind folks of the postcard that he sent to his good friend Allen Ginsberg back many, many years ago when he was dodging the draft by pretending to be a student. And he sent a postcard to Allen Ginsberg talking about how he would like to stick a camera up Allen Ginsberg's fundament and have a little look around. Yeah, I mean, there's enough latency running around. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a hormone thing. No, men never have hormone things. That only happens to women. Okay, back we go.
Because time and gravity is unfair to all of us. So let's put that aside. Let's not talk about her looks, but her looks alone can sink the campaign. From the neck up, forget about the neck down. We're not going to ridicule her. It happens to all, but then the head up. I'm telling you, do you want to look at that for 8 years? Do you really want to have that face staring at you for 8 straight years?
Yeah, Michael, because after all, it would be ever so much more pleasant to look at that pinched, constipated Joe McCarthy clone face of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, wouldn't it? Or maybe spend 8 years wondering if that thing was going to jump off of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's head and attack some poor soul. And that's just those two. Of course, I guess we could watch Marco Rubio actually grow up. That might be kind of charming. No, not really. Or Carly Fiorina. You know, Carly Fiorina said she was going to, that she was the only one who could take away Hillary's ability to use the gender card. She must be in touch with the NRA or something, because the only way to stop a bad person with a vagina is a good person with a vagina. Hey.
That frightening face. At least Rubio's fresh-faced. And I kiddingly call him the ice cream man, but at least, okay, who hates an ice cream man? Nobody. Maybe we need an ice cream man running America. I don't know what he has going for him other than the fact that he's got a fresh face and his name ends in a vowel.
Say anything else you want to about the Savage Wiener. And he never misses a chance to get a little ethnic hatred in. He's got a fresh face and his name ends in a vowel. You'd almost think he was a foreigner, wouldn't you? Instead of being born right here in
the greatest country in the world on earth.
Yeah. This is painful. But I figure, I don't know, this is a little bit like, what, an inoculation? Maybe if we just take little steady doses of this poison, we'll be immune to it eventually. Thorn in the side Thursday. It's not like we didn't know what was coming, right? Lines are open, 304-574-8178, 304-663-HORN, for any of you who want to involve yourself in the conversation. You are more than welcome to do so. Let's see, what's the latest hissy? Mrs. Clinton went to a Chipotle because that's where liberals eat. Eating liberal Chipotle, liberal food. And she didn't tip. Of course, what the Desperate for a Story for-profit media doesn't tell you is that she also didn't pay for the meal that was done by Huma Abedin, her campaign chairperson. No. Hillary Clinton stiffs workers! Well, that obviously proves that she can't stand up for the working class, doesn't it? I mean, that proves that the real friend of the working class is a guy who doesn't believe in the minimum wage. You know, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. And that thing on his head. I think we may have Jim here. Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
Hanging on to my sanity by a thin, thin thread.
Well, I can certainly understand that position. You know, I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
Who in the hell in their right mind would want to be president of this country the way it is now? Democrat or Republican?
Well, but power is always going to be an aphrodisiac, Jim. And there's something to be said. I mean, because, you know, he or she is still the most powerful person on the planet.
Mm-hmm. yes, but aphrodisiacs have been known to be quite poisonous.
That's true.
But, I mean, really, considering the problems that we have and the economic situation and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I didn't go on and bore you with all the prolixity of that, but who would want that job?
Here's another way of approaching that question. Who would want for someone to have that job? That may be the more prescient question, Jim.
Well, yeah, you've got that too. But, I mean, you've just got all these... the government just seems to have gone completely insane. They had Lindsey Graham on TV tonight, and now he's going on about, well, we got to have more soldiers over there, and we got to have more money, and this, that, and the other. And basically fighting what's a lost cause.
Well, but then again, he comes from that. He comes from a long line of lost causers, apparently.
Well, so do I, but not the way he is.
There's lost causes and stupid causes, in other words.
True. But I mean.
But he's just remember he's a reserve officer. He was years ago a judge advocate general in the Air Force. Yeah.
Maybe they may have bought about 05, I don't know.
So nobody's ever going to ship his precious senatorial hide over to the sand to do the dirty business of the oil companies or Israel or whoever's dirty business we're doing at the time. So sure, send a few mothers' sons over there and daughters while we're at it.
Yeah, there it is. There you have it.
You know, it's always the same thing, Jim. Rich man's war, poor man's fight.
Well, I've used that expression many times on this program before, and believe you me, I know whereof I speak. I've seen enough of it, but I can tell you this, going back to the original thing I said earlier, why anybody would want to have that job, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the entire government, I mean, you know, all you heard today on the news was about some guy in a gyrocopter going near the Capitol. Well, big fucking deal. Excuse my French, but big
fucking deal. Do you remember Matthias Rust?
Yeah.
Do you remember the great big purple polka-dotted screaming sweat condition alpha hissy the USSR had when that 16-year-old boy landed his Piper Cub in Red Square?
Oh, yeah. I think they finally took care of that and repatriated him, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, but heads rolled in the general staff.
Well, of course, because, I mean, those air defenses over Moscow were supposed to be absolutely invulnerable.
Yeah, but they're not worth a damn if you're flying under 150 feet.
Well, that's true, too. And maybe the young man had a real point, and I think he did have a real point in that. Because radar basically is effective, 300 feet?
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember that. And
But that was the first thing I thought of when I saw that story yesterday and watched the national media frenzy, of course, was that I wondered if we will behave the way the Soviets did, and lo and behold, it's like we got hold of the script.
Well, I think you're right there.
Because NORAD, really NORAD command is not out there worrying about ultralight aircraft. I mean, I guess you could put a little bit of C4 on one and maybe do some damage, but.
Well, you know, who knows where the North American Canadian Air Defense Command is located now. Because NORAD's basically been put in the same place as the Greenbrier thing was.
I always figured NORAD was, I mean, aren't they out in the Rockies somewhere?
Mm-hmm, under Cheyenne Mountain.
That's what I thought.
But, I mean, you know, now, of course, they realize that this, been made public the world over, the defense mechanisms of that particular thing, well, you can always, no matter how big your fixed defenses are, they can always be overcome.
Well, sure. I mean, I forget which Chinese dynasty it was, but, you know, they built the Great Wall, and as quick as they were done, the barbarian hordes outside said, well, I'll be damned, would you look at that wall? Why don't we bribe the gatekeeper?
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's like, you know, any type of defense that man can build, well, man has been able now to overcome anything that nature can build.
It's the mouse-mousetrap, burglar-locksmith conundrum.
Yeah.
All you ever do in ratcheting this stuff up is get a better mouse and a better class of burglar.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, it's, as far as, it's my personal opinion, I'm not speaking from any position of authority here, but it would appear to me as all these type of fixed defenses are just about as useful as the machino of the secret line, you know?
Well, that's exactly it. I mentioned Lawrence of Arabia earlier today. I love that film. And
it was on last night.
Oh, was it really? And there's that early climactic scene that sort of establishes Lawrence's credentials, where he decides to attack Aqaba from the land because all of the Turkish guns were fixed emplacements pointed at the sea.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same idea.
Well, look at Hitler's Atlantic Wall.
Yeah. Great guns. Pointing the wrong
way. Guns, great, beautiful Art Deco bunkers and stuff like that. You ought to see those things. A lot of them are still there. But, I mean, you know, the basic thing depended on, number one, from which way they were coming.
Right, right. The invaders had to cooperate by marching into the guns.
Yeah.
Or sailing into them.
And, of course, you know, you had Uncle Adolf up there snoring away after spending a night with his propaganda minister who wouldn't release the panzers and stuff like that, which could have thrown back that particular invasion. But then you had, oh, no, it's going to come at the Pas-de-Calais, or it's going to come this, that, and the other. I mean, my point is, all these defenses and weapons and stuff like that, when some guy builds with this thing, some other guy's going to build a bigger and better one. And it's just still the old doctrine of mutually assured destruction. That ain't going to work. Other than just to, you know, blast the planet into a stone age. And who in the hell would want to be commander-in-chief and make those decisions through whatever channels he uses to release?
Oh, but Jim, look at the pomp and ceremony. Look at look at the money you're going to make coming out. That's why I say that there's, you know, I've been talking for quite some time now about my theory of the crumbling empire. This is not even the same the United States changes with the rise of the national security state under Harry Truman. And Harry Truman by 1963 was lamenting it and saying it badly needed to be torn down and rethought. But the fact of the matter is, when Harry Truman was done being president, he and Margaret and Bess literally packed their suitcases, got in a car, and drove back to Independence, Missouri.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, there was no 50-car motorcade. There was no jet.
Air Force One.
No, but now the president, who was it? Who was the Roman emperor who he clove the empire in twain and then quietly resigned and went back to gardening there in Croatia on the Dalmatian coast?
Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. I think it may have begun with an O. I'm not sure.
No, I want to say Vespasian, but I know it wasn't Vespasian.
Mm-mm.
Diocletian, perhaps.
Well, he went to Split.
Yeah, that's the guy. And lived to, you know, lived into his retirement. Not a lot of emperors could do
that.
Oh, it is. I'd love to see it someday. There's not a lot of emperors who got to do that back then. But now, for all intents and purposes, when you're done being president, you become a retired imperial administrator, and you go and you sit down in your comfortable chair and open the spigot and let the money pour in.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's true.
I remember George H.W. Bush got... Reagan didn't really get to enjoy it because his brain was already hollowed out by Alzheimer's by the time he left office. George H.W. Bush immediately accepted a speaking position, flew to Japan, and puked on the prime minister. Bill Clinton, well...
George H.W. was taking too much halcyon.
Was that... Well, whatever it was,
that's what they said caused...
Yeah, he yacked right in the prime minister's lap. And then Bill Clinton goes on tour and gets a dim leader laid low, but there's no way that guy's out there eating beans. He just happens to can't leave the country because everybody wants to send him to The Hague for war crimes, and he damned well knows it. Barack Obama will be, when he leaves office, a rock star, Jim. I mean, he'll be Elvis level. Everybody will want to hear from Barack Obama because they know that he'll probably start talking with some candor about things that he couldn't before. And that's the way it's going to be with every president. I mean, you're made. If you can look, Marco Rubio is 43 years old. If that little wet behind the ears feller could get into the into the Oval Office, he's 50. Well, okay, so 44. He'd be 52 when he leaves. And life would just be sunshine, strawberries, and roses for the rest of his natural-born days. Why would you want to be president? Because it's really cool when you're not anymore.
Well, it's great if you can live and survive to some majority to enjoy all those perks and benefits, I guess. I don't know. But, I sent you an email about Empire. And I remember the riddle of the Sphinx. What walks on three legs in the morning, two at noon, and four in the evening? And that's Empire. Remember that riddle of the Sphinx?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As solved by Oedipus.
Right.
Yeah, the Sphinx at Thebes at the crossroads.
The same thing with Empire. And, it's just going to collapse on top of itself, it would appear to me. I don't know. But I can't see anybody who would, number one, I really want to have president right now. And number two...
Let me disagree with you there just a skosh, Jim. I really would like to see Bernie Sanders be president.
Oh, I would too, but he's got more sense than to get into that position.
He's still toying with it, but he knows he'll never be president. He knows he'll never. This is going to be, and this caused some amount of eyebrow raising yesterday when Hillary Clinton said, "We've got, even if we have to amend the Constitution, we have got to get the dirty money out of politics." I think that's an easy nostrum to throw out there if you realize that we are never going to have that constitutional amendment.
Of course not.
But the fact of the matter is, this is going to be a $2 billion campaign.
$2 billion. You said $2 billion.
I said that.
Well, last time I think somebody ran, it was like $1
billion. Right. But what it amounts to is a massive, because you're probably tuned into a lot of the same email lists that I am. And every damn day it's going to be, friend, can you spare $3? And what we're talking about here, and I think very few people talk about it in these terms, and not that I'm some sort of prophet or anything, but I think it deserves to be talked about in these terms. What our presidential campaigns are now, and to a certain extent any national campaign, even if they're state-level Senate or House of Representatives campaigns, if they capture enough of the national attention, but presidential campaigns in particular are massive wealth redistribution schemes, Jim, in which we redistribute wealth $3, $5, $20, $25 at a time into the hands of a millionaire class of media moguls and political consultants.
Oh, it's the biggest cash cow going that they could ever, ever, ever have delivered. You know that, and I know that.
Yeah, exactly.
And for what?
Well, for the purpose. Because that, and I guess this is going to be our little moment of paranoia, but that, Jim, is what buys the acquiescence of the media industrial complex. As long as they're getting a cut, as long as they are, to use language from the Godfather series, wetting their beaks, then they're not going to come out hollering about how we need campaign finance reform and we need to get rid of all of this, what Hillary Clinton refers to as legalized influence peddling. Because they're direct beneficiaries of it.
Well, you know, nobody's gonna, you know, basically cut off his own spending tap. And that's all there is to it. It's just, it's enormous cash flow of money. And it's like I said before, you know, many times, it's K Street and Wall Street. And that's who runs the country.
And none of the rest of us have addresses on either one.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Or as
that's
George Carlin put it, there's a big club and you ain't in it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, things are now getting to the point where it's really become insurmountable almost, actually. The problems that are besetting the world and this country in particular. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I'm just trying to be realistic with my little Jeremy-ad here. But
I take your remarks as offered completely in good faith and goodwill. But the system is broken. I think the system is unfixable. I think it will result in some sort of change that we probably will not like.
No, absolutely not.
And yet at the same time, and I'm not trying to piss in anybody's wheaties, Jim, but there are a lot of people out there on our side of this discussion who are saying that we can cure this by voting for the Green candidate or Run Ralph Run, or maybe adopting Ralph Nader's position of,
oh, God,
hey, if only all the progressives will support that magnificent progressive libertarian hero Rand Paul, we can finally break the stranglehold of corporations. And I kick furniture when I hear this shit, because,
well, that's where I was back in 2000 when you know who got into you know where, and this friend of mine said, well, I voted for Ralph Nader, and I said, why? Do you think he could really be elected? I said, all you did was vote for George Bush, George W. Oh, do you think so? I said, hello? Are you on some type of medication? I said, could you not see that? Well, I did it as a protest vote. And I said, yeah, you protested all right. And now you really got something to protest. You got an asshole in there who's going to lead us into a war and who's absolutely nuts.
And now we didn't
talk for a while after that.
Well, and now we are into a vastly more dangerous world.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is accelerated so much more. It's just going with horrendous rapidity. And God knows. And I told this person, I said, don't you realize what you did in voting for a man who is totally unelectable, who is in his ascending years, just totally out of touch with reality. I mean, you know, Nader been good as far as, you know, about the Corvair or whatever that car he was going on about, this, that, and the other.
No, I don't want to take anything away from Ralph, but I believe, and let's understand, we're not talking, again, we're not talking about somebody who's out there eating beans. Ralph is a very wealthy man.
Pays his salary to his employees once a year.
And
where's combat boots?
Yeah, he's not, you know, He's a political naive.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think he's very politically savvy. I think he does a lot of things.
Well, then he is manipulating the political naivete of a lot of people who think that he's a progressive hero.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. Actually, I've never had the use of that son of a bitch ever since then. Never. Because he knew exactly what he was doing. He was, you know, investing in Cisco and places like that, putting all that money away. He defeated Al Gore and put the worst person, he helped to defeat Al Gore. And he knew what he was doing. He ain't stupid.
Well, there is that school of thought, Jim, that says, I call it the burn baby burn school of thought, in which we just need to hasten the demise of everything and let it all fall down and see what and see what sort of golem rises from the rubble.
Well, I can tell you one thing about a golem, and you know the legend behind the golem, too. Once you put that baby together with mud and spit or whatever you want to, you better be able to hide somewhere when it comes walking around. That's for sure. Because you've made a price.
And as Dr. Bill has so brilliantly referenced, the right wing's put a roadmap out there of what they want a post-constitutional America to look like. And it is a frightening damn thing.
What exactly do you think they propose to do in a nutshell? I have not been listening.
Oh, sweet Jesus. They're gonna start by imposing a balanced budget amendment, which will be a flat disaster for the country. They want a flat tax. They want to constitutionally ban gay marriage. They want to address issues of birthright citizenship and essentially eviscerate the 14th Amendment. They want to further enshrine the Second Amendment as holy writ.
Mm-hmm.
That Mark Levin character wrote a book. I mean, look up Mark Levin book online. You can find it, and Dr. Bill has gone over it point by point.
Oh, God, I've heard that idiot on TV.
Yeah, the Mark Levin, oh. Dr. Bill.
I mean Mark Levin, yes. I mean, Dr. Bill had...
And they're not kidding. I mean, they really want it. And there's another guy that he deconstructed in the last couple of weeks, who says, no, trust us, we're only going to do a balanced budget amendment at the Constitutional Convention. And that's just a lie. And it's a lie that even looking down the centuries, James Madison recognized. He said an Article 5 convention will be a disaster because the moment that thing is gaveled into order, it's game on. Everything is on the table.
I've seen a lot of constitutions in history come and go. I certainly have. And I guess ours is not exactly set in stone or written in concrete or whatever, you know? That's about it. And tonight, you know, just looking at TV and hearing some things that were said by the earlier caller, I for one am just absolutely disaffected and disconnected by the whole damn thing.
Yeah, and wait till the Constitutional Convention opens up, brought to you by the Koch brothers. Koch brothers, your friends. I mean, I'm not kidding about that. Wait till the Constitutional Convention opens up and the libertarian gold bugs get hold of it, and we wind up with a gold-based currency and the permanent economic roller coaster that kind of silliness imposes.
Let me ask you one more thing. I'm not trying to keep you on here.
That's okay.
Hell, it's 8 o'clock. You need about an hour for your other callers. Do you have any, you can put on your cap and tell me who you think the Republicans might nominate?
My suspicion is that it will be either Scott Walker or Jeb Bush. The old the old power money wants Jeb Bush. Scott Walker has the Koch brothers lined up, and the rest of them, you know, the gold bugs and stuff. The stand with Rand Bunch will be a nuisance, but he won't go. It will be, you know, for what it's worth, it'll be Scott Walker or Jeb Bush, and of those two. The biggest problem is that in a recent survey, granted we're oodles of months, 18 months away from November 2016, Jim, but 42% of Republicans surveyed said there was no way in hell, forget about it, that they would ever, ever, ever in a million goddamn years ever vote for Jeb Bush. 42%.
That's what I've heard, too.
Now, if Scott Walker manages to get indicted, different story. Chris Christie, nah. Then again, you know, maybe this country has become so dysfunctional that we'll look at, you know what, we need a man who'll just smack us around a little bit. Maybe the Republicans will say that to themselves. I mean, they have a hard time figuring out what rape means. They don't think much of women. They don't like brown people. They damn sure don't like teachers. Well, Chris Christie don't like none of them.
I wonder who the vice president would be, because, you know, take a look at Chris Christie.
Oh, I said a long time ago that if I had gambling money, I would run to the nearest parlor and lay down a $20 bill on Joni Ernst.
Oh, boy, our castrate queen. Castrating queen.
You betcha. Right. The castration queen of Iowa. Because, you know, she's a veteran, and she's a woe man, so she could take on Hillary from the number two slot, and she could, well, of the people who are out there running, Ben Carson, no. There's no way Rand Paul's monumental ego and that thing on his head could ever tolerate being number two to anybody. Ted Cruz, no, he's the anointed future king of America, and no president would ever, ever, ever want him within a heartbeat of his own life, because, hell, Ted might slit the man's or woman's throat in their sleep. Carly Fiorina, forget it. She might be running for vice president, but she's got so many negatives that not much chance. Marco Rubio would probably like to be vice president, and then he could mature into it and run for president in 2020 or 2024 as a 52-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some viability there. A Bush will choose from the Bush cronies.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a Rock River Republican, and she was very much afraid that Bush might get the nomination. So, you know, that told me something right there.
Yeah. But Jebby occupies the same space that Willard did. That's why we had such a delightful little clown car act in 2012, because the Republicans just could not quite come to terms that Bishop Willard Romney was going to be their nominee. They didn't want him, but they eventually settled on him. And once again, they don't have anybody that they really want. They want to dig up Ronnie Reagan and run his corpse. I mean, let's face it.
I never could understand their love affair with that man. I just never could. I mean, why do you want this great B actor with bad hair, or the Brill Cream King?
I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, Bernie Sanders has said on the Democratic side he will not play a Nader. That if he runs, I take that to mean that if he runs, he'll run as a Democrat. I'm guessing he won't, even though he's close. Polling numbers: Hillary's at 43% among Democrats. The next one is Bernie at 5. And I think Martin O'Malley is at a half of a percentage point. And then, of course, you know, Jim Webb is making a little bit of noise.
Well, listen, my friend, I appreciate all the stats. And,
well, there's damn, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, Jim, but.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you never can tell who's going to come out of that mix and what goes on at those conventions or even before those conventions and even after the election process begins, which voting machines are going to be tampered with. And, you know, nobody can really believe exactly anything, at least I don't, as far as the way they, the political machines crank out candidates and winners, you know? But like I say, who in the hell would want that job? I mean, you couldn't give it to me.
Yeah, but it's pretty well established that there are a bunch who do. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Hell, you too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from just across the river a ways. Tell you what, let's take a little break and see what happens on the phone lines. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Green News Report next.
You said it was your duty, yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army. It's no longer a drill. Take a look around. If you have any doubts, to free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time. Every day there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, a fire on the earth, time to tell the truth. What is this work? And the children that today are playing games, conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
It's Thursday, April 16, 2015.
We have to take into account all of the costs of not doing this.
Ontario, Canada launches cap and trade system to fight global warming.
We aren't thinking critically about the impacts of where the money of Harvard's endowment is going.
Students push Harvard to divest from fossil fuels. New poll finds majority of Americans support a tax on carbon emissions. Plus, the last male white rhino on Earth is now under 24-hour armed guard.
Wow, all of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And when my granddaughter Olivia looks at me and says, Grandma, what did you do? What I'm not going to say to her, I put my head in the sand, and so I didn't take an initiative that would have saved the planet for your grandchildren. I'm not going to do that.
Oh, why not? Everyone else is. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's Earth Day coming up, but as we like to say every year here at the Green News Report, it's Earth Day every day.
Yeah, check out any of the tens of thousands of events around the world celebrating the only known planet in the universe to support life.
Speaking of which, what do you have for us today?
Citizens around the world are rising up to demand action on climate change in Canada. Tens of thousands marched across Canada this week to demand government action on global warming in advance of a climate summit held by Canada's provincial governors, in spite of heavy criticism from the Conservative Harper administration, which is trying to exploit Canada's fossil fuel reserves. Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne announced her province is launching a carbon cap and trade system to cut greenhouse gas emissions. She explained why in a press conference.
If we step back and we say, well, we can't do this because potentially there might be an impact that might be negative in one particular sector, that would be irresponsible. You know, if we put our heads in the sand and we say, well, climate change is, it's not a problem that we can tackle right now. It's too risky. It's too politically fraught. We're just afraid to do it. That would not be responsible.
Cap and trade allows companies a limited amount of greenhouse gas emissions, and if a company has a leftover allowance, then it can sell that to companies that have gone over the limit. Ontario joins British Columbia and Quebec in now linking up to California's booming carbon trading market, which has already earned California nearly $1 billion.
Some critics have regarded cap and trade plans as a scheme, as opposed to a more simple carbon tax, a tax on emissions.
There are two different systems. Cap and trade actually deals directly with industries, whereas a carbon tax deals with everybody.
So everybody pays that tax, but that tax is then refunded to consumers for residential use.
It depends on how it's constructed. It doesn't have to go back to households. The revenue can be distributed in a number of ways. In America, a new poll has found that 67% of those polled supported that simple kind of carbon tax in which the biggest polluters pay and the revenue goes back to households. In the U.S., a divestment movement is gaining steam. At Harvard University this week, students blockaded university buildings, demanding that Harvard University divest its $36 billion endowment of all holdings in the fossil fuel industry.
Wait, $36 billion Harvard invests in stuff?
Yes, not all of that in fossil fuels, but it is the largest endowment in the United States.
Wow, that's amazing. So if Harvard pulls their money out of fossil fuels, that's a lot of money that will not be invested in those companies.
That's right. And in an interview with Democracy Now!, Divest Harvard student leader Talia Rothstein says civil disobedience became necessary.
We've been repeatedly refused open dialogue of the kind we feel this issue deserves. They refused to engage on this issue and inevitably had to resort to civil disobedience to put as much public pressure on the Harvard administration as possible.
Just a reminder, it was divestments like that that eventually got South Africa to end its apartheid regime. So we'll see if they have the same kind of effect here on the fossil fuel industry.
And good news, the race for clean energy has passed a turning point. Bloomberg News reports that around the world, more capacity for renewable energy is being built each year than coal, natural gas, and oil combined.
Nice, I like it.
Meanwhile, a heartbreaking story out of Africa. The last male northern white rhinoceros on the entire planet, there's literally only one male left, He has been placed under 24-hour armed guard in Sudan. He's one of only five remaining white rhinos in the world. The last male white rhino's horn has been amputated to deter poachers who have hunted all rhino species to near extinction in Africa because rhino body parts are highly prized in China.
Wow. So as soon as that one guy is gone?
That's it for the species.
Wow. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one.
24 minutes past the hour, and huge thanks going out to our buddy Mark in Florida, who has just taken us down to only $35 to go to finish the week and get us hopefully a little shot at getting ahead. And there's about $525 in bills out there still hanging about. It's okay. We'll get there. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly. Really, thank you kindly. Alongside Ed this evening. Thank you. Before I go to the phones, quick run over to the email box. A note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line, protest vote. Just to agree and expand on what you and Jim were talking about, when it comes to the presidency, I reject the entire notion of a protest vote. You can protest, or you can vote. Or you can do both, but a vote is not a protest. I see no moral dilemma or crisis of conscience if one were to vote for Hillary Clinton in November 2016, or Gore in 2000, or Kerry in 2004, and then march in protest the very first time after her or his inauguration day that she or he, skip a bit, brother, does something that you object to, no matter how predictable it was. Primaries are one thing. Do what you want there, unless it's a very specific situation. And I guess it's a bit different if one has the luxury of living in a solid blue state or the displeasure of living in a solid red state. But living in swing states, as I always have, I don't have the smug luxury of moral superiority that comes with a protest vote. I'd only be shirking my responsibilities as a voting-age citizen and screwing my fellow countrymen. I will vote. I will protest. I will not cast a protest vote in any presidential election. Sorry, says Michael. Ranting. I don't think you're ranting. I think you're making damn good sense. Real good sense. Let's jump over to the Herald line, where I suspect we have Flavio. Is that you, Flavio?
Hey. Good evening, sir.
How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to jump in right away into the subject, but I at hand, but I did want to say, you know, that I really was amused by that guy landing in the where did he land again? With the
West lawn of the Capitol.
Gyro? The white
West lawn of the Capitol with a gyrocopter.
A gyroscope or no? It's
a little helicopter.
Yeah, but the auto gyro was invented by Juan de la Sierra.
I did not.
Yes, it was a Spaniard. He's a precursor of the modern helicopter, Sikorsky and everything. And he was born Juan de la Sierra in 1895, and he died in 1936. And I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now. There's a picture of a Pitcairn PCA-2 autogyro built in the U.S. It's a single rudder. Single rotor, I should say. It's a precursor of the modern light one-person helicopter. It's kind of interesting. My father was an aeronautical engineer in Brazil, and so there's a history in my family of aeronautical engineering, and so I kind of know these things. You know your Cessnas in California?
Yeah.
They're built in Brazil.
Really?
Yeah,
well, I know that from time to time I will get on an aircraft in Charleston, West Virginia, and it will be one of those Air Keebler affairs built for really, really tiny people. It'll be an Embraer. And I believe that's Brazilian.
The Brazilian aerospace company. I just thought I'd throw that in there. But he went postal in a really creative way, huh?
I guess you could say that. I think he went admirably postal. I'm not the least bit upset with the guy. Let me retract that. Yeah, maybe I am, because now we're going to have some sort of weird ass paranoid fixation, and we'll get just a little bit more fascist than we were the day before he did it.
I remember
being on the mall years and years ago with Ferg. And there were these people out there. It was this lovely spring day, nice breeze blowing, and they had these awesome freaking three-dimensional kites, okay? Damn things that you controlled with two hands. You know, there were separate cords. And, you know, one clever soul was using one as a sail to drag him around the mall on his skateboard.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm guessing that's not going to be happening anymore. No more kites on the mall, because they may be Al Qaeda kites or Al Shish Kebab in Peoria kites.
No, but I just wanted to add a few remarks regarding the event. Number one, I commend the gentleman. He told everybody he was going to do it beforehand, and he's not crazy. It's a very thoughtful person. He wanted to draw attention to the need to, you know, take dirty money out of politics, you know, amend the Constitution, strike down Citizens United, et cetera, et cetera. But predictably, the day it happened, the media pretty much glossed over everything, and I was really miffed this morning when I was listening to Bill Press. And I like Bill. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But he was just, what is the word that I want to use? Poo-pooing. Yeah,
yeah,
that's the word.
Denigrating.
Denigrating, omitting the reason why he did this, as the media did. The mainstream media did the same thing. They didn't go into the details of what he did and why he did it. That he had, letters addressed to all the congresspersons, both, representatives and senators. And so, to me, I know it's a quixotic thing, but to me it is emblematic of how out of touch the government is with the wishes of the people. In other words, how the disconnect between what people really want and the result of the ballot box. Okay?
Okay.
Now, we were talking about... Sorry about that.
Quite all right.
I got a little allergies. I got allergies this time of year.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
I got a subscription to Benadryl. But, anyway...
Yeah, my problem with Benadryl is, I start getting... I'm so sensitive to all any form of antihistamine. I get sleepy just walking down the aisle in the drugstore.
It doesn't quite affect me that way. It's kind of strange, but it's like ibuprofen. I take ibuprofen. It's the only thing that works for bone pain, or muscular pain, I should say. you always think it's the bones, but actually it's muscular.
Oh, no. Seeing as how I've got three discs in my neck that are practically chalk, I know a little bit about that. I can't remember the last day I didn't have a headache lately.
But we were talking about misogyny and racism and how, you know, when Hillary gets elected, you know, we'll spend the next eight, the Republicans will spend the next 8 years, you know, talking about her ovaries and estrogen.
Which, to be fair, given her age, and I'm not, are not an issue anymore, most likely.
No, I'm beginning to feel that, too, going on half a century. But what I wanted to say is there are very legitimate reasons to criticize both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama today was the subject of Democracy Now!, and they had a segment on the TPP. The headline read, "A Corporate Trojan Horse. Critics decry secretive TPP trade deal as a threat to democracy," and they had...
can I call time out?
Sure.
Because that's one of those moments.
Sure.
That's what, no, not just in the conversation. I just want to call time out and cackle for a few minutes because, well, we all know that I laugh maniacally every time I read the phrase or hear the phrase, "our democracy." When?
Yeah.
You know, when, where, how, why, who, what century, at what point in time ever on this continent was there a democracy? And I will repeat my little catchphrase: in the history of the United States, democracy is aspirational and has never been operational, our democracy. See, I think these outlets try to push the notion that we've got one so that people won't look up and go, "Wow, this is really beyond all recognition, isn't it?" Yes, it is, because it's a freaking plutocratic oligarchy. Democracy on my aching back. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox. You may now continue,
Bobby. No, you're absolutely right, and that's the thing. I mean, but let's get a little analytical here, okay?
Sure.
Who did they have? Who did they have today? they had Alan Grayson. They had Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizen. My former English teacher, Jim, World War II veteran, was a subscriber to the newsletter of Public Citizen, and he always, you know, handed the newsletters down to me because I could never afford to subscribe to all the magazines that he subscribed to, but he was quite the radical. He was in he went down south to lead freedom rides and everything, and he taught Black American history, Afro American history, children's literature, women's literature over at the local college here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where I live. And then there was Representative Alan Grayson also, you know, the Democrat representing Florida's 9th congressional district, and I recommend people go to today's Democracy Now!, the segment about the Trans-Pacific partnership.
Yeah, don't you love the Orwellian quality of that? Just let that roll around in your mouth before you spit it out like something nasty. It's not a treaty.
Yeah.
It's not a treaty.
Oh.
It's a partnership. You know, just like everybody who works at Walmart are, you know, they're not wage slaves. They're associates.
Associates. Yeah, so I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about that, and it is amazing because Lori Wallach goes into every chapter because, it, you know, it was released in WikiLeaks. They wanted to keep it secret.
Right.
But it got out. You know, I don't know if it was because of a whistleblower in there, but it made it to WikiLeaks, and now, you know, the whole world knows that this is And then they showed segments of Barack Obama praising it, lying, saying that it was going to be good for American workers, that it would be good for jobs in this country. You know, so, you know, I think there are very legitimate reasons to criticize Barack Obama, who, after all, comes from the Daily Machine in Chicago, and we all know what that is, right? Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, sure.
Daily. He was groomed by the, you know, the corporate lackeys. And then there's, you know, there's Hillary, Walmart, O'Clinton, right?
Yeah.
How long was she on the board of Walmart? What is the track record as far as, you know, being for labor? And I'm really big into labor, and I think that, don't get me wrong.
No, okay, here, I'm really big into the working class, Flavia.
We don't even have a section in the newspapers anymore that, remember way back, we're old enough to remember when there was even a section on labor in the newspapers.
Well, not where I grew up, but I'll take your word for it. I mean,
there was.
No, I know. There were labor-operated radio stations and labor-operated newspapers. There was labor-oriented, all kinds of labor-oriented media. Not anymore, because Merca doesn't need that. Right? Because what Merca needs is another installment of Who Wants to Win a Millionaire's 30 Socks.
Did you listen to Glenn Ford's Black Agenda Report? The recent one where he basically nails it. I mean, there's not going to be a primary. Hillary is going to be nominated. The League of Women Voters used to have debates where, you know, third, fourth, and fifth party candidates, there'd be debates. You remember, we're old enough to remember Ross Perot and the giant sucking sound?
Sure. And I can go back further. How about John Anderson?
Yeah.
But...
And was Ross wrong?
But wait. I don't know. That's like saying, is a stopped clock wrong when it's right twice a day? Ross Perot was a lunatic.
He was.
I mean, remember there were Martians involved?
No, but I liked the little guy. He was cute.
Well, no, he was, but... I remember, oh God, was it Radiohead that was on Saturday Night Live way back in 2000, and they guess offended Lorne Michaels or something, because at the end of SNL, the one of them held up a sign that said, "Let Ralph debate," and I'm a free speech guy, you know, let a million flowers bloom, let a million noses sneeze. But I have to be, Flavio, I have to be a realist about the situation.
Yeah, we're really in a bad way. I understand that.
Ain't no third party going to be no president. This is not 1860. You know, the Whig Party...
And that's why Bernie Sanders said that there ain't no way in hell he's going to run if there's any chance that he ruins it for the opposition party. He doesn't want to be a spoiler. And I understand that completely, but you and I will coincide on this, that wouldn't it be wonderful if the ticket were Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren? I mean, wasn't Elizabeth Warren just...
I know, and we're buddies, Flavio, but if I never hear Elizabeth Warren's name mentioned in presidential terms regarding 2016 again, it'll be too soon. Not because I don't like Elizabeth Warren. I do. I tremendously respect her. I respect Elizabeth Warren so much that I believe she is not a liar, Flavio. Because she...
Again?
I respect Elizabeth Warren so much that I think she's not a liar. Because in order for her to run for president, she would have to make herself a liar. Because she hasn't been cute about it. She hasn't tap-danced around the edges. She has said, I ain't running. I don't want to run. You know what I mean?
It's emblematic of her integrity.
Well, it just gets a little stalkerish for those of us on our side of the debate who keep going, oh, well, you know, she could still run. You know, or God knows, the hustling emails that I get every other day or so say, friend, can you spare $3 for our campaign to draft Elizabeth Warren?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, she's become a fundraising tactic. And I find that as someone who is really, really serious about the issue of keeping gender out of politics, it's almost stalkery the way some of these outfits are behaving.
I haven't followed it that much, but it's gotten that bad.
Yes, it's gotten that bad. Friend, just another $5. Lawrence Lessig, Lawrence Lessig, somebody whose political thinkings I have respected, added his name to a friend. Can you send us $15 to convince Elizabeth Warren to be president? Yeah, look, I don't know, and this is not. I'm not barking at you, Flavio. Okay,
I'm not.
This is just the kind of intense exchanges that we have here.
I don't mind that.
I don't know what kind of Isinglass curtained unreality the progressive so-called left, what left, lives in this country. But even if they nominated Elizabeth Warren, she'd get beaten like a barred mule. They've been working on her for a couple of years already. They've got the Republican side of the fence convinced that she's one bottle full of gasoline away from being a damn communist. A Bolshevik, for God's sakes.
Well, you know, I'm a Bolshevik, but...
No, I know. I mean, it's not a dirty word to you, but it's a dirty word to Emery and Eileen sitting there in their Barca lounger. And, you know, that's the class of people and the demographic and the psychographic that vote. Because, you know, Emery and Eileen are white, and they just go down to the polls, and they vote, and they come back, and they don't have to stand for 6 hours in the blazing heat and the 98% humidity of South Florida in November. And so, I mean, I'm not, like I said, I want to reiterate, I'm not barking at you.
No, we're...
But I just get so gall dang frustrated.
Okay, this is where I'd like to steer the conversation. Okay, so the League of Women Voters have been left out. We don't have, you know, a pluralistic debate anymore. We just got Tweedledee and Tweedledum fossilized. Okay. And now Hillary comes out with that campaign commercial. Oh my God, she's just one of us. Was that a latte that she had? I don't know. And Chipotle's and all that. She's just like one of us. Oh, yeah.
You mean Chipotle?
Yeah. Chipotle's, whatever. So the question I wanted to ask you is, what are the chances that, okay, let's say, and there's a very good chance of that, especially if Walker gets nominated, man, there's so much dirt on him, and there's Wisconsinites, there's groups in Wisconsin trying to get out the dirt on Walker from his days in, what was he in Milwaukee?
County. Oh, city. Was he city or county administrator?
County administrator, whatever.
Isn't everybody who got within 300 feet of the building, haven't they been indicted?
Pretty much.
Except
that,
for him.
That lady Cleafish or whatever is in jail. That was one.
And that's the one thing that could be a real stick in his spokes is getting indicted. That takes some of the fun out of running for president. That's why Jimmy Dick Perry down in Texas Stan has not thrown his head into the ring or hat or whatever. Thrown something in the ring. Not the brightest bulb, Jimmy Dick. But
no, and it's kind of funny. I mean, some of my friends want him to get nominated just so that the Republicans can lose. But the question that I wanted
wait a minute. Rein in the horses for a minute. You're assuming that if Scott Walker was the nominee, he'd lose. This is going to be a $2 billion campaign. Who's got that kind of campaign money? Hey, look, the Koch brothers hitched their wagon to his star a long time ago, and the only thing that's going to make them uncouple is an indictment.
I'm a little more hopeful in that people have lost with gobs of money. People have lost with...
Well, Willard Romney lost with gobs of money.
Yeah, that's a good example.
But Barack Obama had a bigger gob.
The question that I ask you, okay, and this is on a hopeful note, and then I'd like to just end with a parenthetical note on that crazy person from Dallas, but only peripherally. If Hillary wins the presidency, what are the chances that progressives in this country, people that care about the issues, that want to see Hillary move to address, you know, more basic issues, more domestic issues, what are the chances of pulling Hillary to the left? What are the chances?
I don't think there's going to be a lot of pulling necessary. I mean, I think she'll make some domestic noises about the working class. It'll be phrased in terms of the middle class because nobody ever really gives a damn about the poor. Mm-hmm. I think. You know, she'll work to keep the Affordable Care Act going, but this is one of those things I keep running up against. We still have a Congress, Flavio, and that Congress is, I don't want to break anybody's heart, but I'm not going to lie to people the way that articles do that pop up on the internet saying coal is over. You know, that drives me crazy. I talked about that last night.
Oh, baloney. Yeah.
I'm not
going to
tell. Oh, by God, we're going to take the House back in 2016. Horseshit. Whoever is the President of the United States is going to be the President of the United States with a majority probably in both houses of the Congress. So the most you can look forward to is probably what Barack Obama has finally figured out is his only course of action. And that is to do what he can through the executive department via executive orders.
Mm-hmm.
I've been at this since 2004, and I've been watching politics for a lot longer than that. I think, if I recall correctly, the first time I heard a progressive use the term Hitlery was probably 2004. She has as many or more problems on the outside of the so-called left than she does coming from Republicans, and that may be the fundamental problem with her campaign. And again, you know, you're not going to find that new logo showing up on the Horn homepage anytime soon, because we are still in primary. We're in primary season, but she's got terrible problems with progressives, because it's been going on for over a decade now, and some of this stuff she has earned. You know, the coziness. I remember when, who was it? Was it garbage men, sanitation workers that were on strike in New York? And instead of standing with them, she went to a ribbon cutting at a Goldman Sachs function. Something like that.
You remember when Obama promised that he'd wear a pair of sneakers and walk with Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah.
That's what that reminds me of. But I wanted to end on a note of hope. Is there any hope? I mean, are we like, you know, are we like at the entrance of the of Dante's Inferno, you know?
Abandon hope, all you enter here.
Lasciate ogni speranza voi che entrate.
Tish, that's French. No, that's Italian. I know.
Lasciate ogni speranza voi che entrate.
I'll give you my version of hope. I hope we can stay out of stupid wars. And
say that again.
I hope we can stay out of all wars, especially stupid
Russia.
Wars. And thus far, it looks like Barack Obama is not showing a particular desire to channel his inner Alexander and go to Persia. That's a good thing.
No thanks.
Mrs. Clinton,
47 traitors.
Mrs. Clinton has shown a hawkish side, and I hope that she will be equally disinterested in World War III. I think that's a possibility. Because and you'd never want to call this bluff, but in a way, Barack Obama already has. He's asked him for authority to do what he's doing in the Middle East.
I loved it when he put McCain and Graham Cracker in their place.
Well, but I mean, realistically, procedurally, he has sent a request to Congress for authority to wage war in the war that he's already waging in the Middle East. Congress has refused to take it up, to even consider it at all. Now, this is a bunch of bloodthirsty Republicans who've never met a war they didn't like. But but they won't even take it up. It makes me think, you know what would be fun? Constitutionally, the declaring of war is solely the province of the Congress. If they want a war with Iran, you know what they can do? They can take a vote in each house and declare war on Iran. And at that point in time, the president has no choice but to wage it as commander-in-chief. The Congress can sua sponte declare war. Now, I don't ever want to call their bluff on it, but think about it.
I'm thinking what you're thinking, Obama was really savvy in that regard.
Yeah. He's smarter than they are.
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
There's nobody in the Republican caucus that has an IQ approaching his.
The Republicans have never had a war that they didn't like. You know,
And yet they won't, because you know you can't let one of those people go thinking he can wage war. I mean, really, that's just for the white men, right? Yeah. Hey, Flavio, it has been a delightful conversation, and I thank you for it.
No, I thank you. And what a crazy woman that woman in Dallas is, huh?
Oh,
I mean, after all the women.
That's just the first one.
That's just the astronaut.
No, that's just the first one. There's going to be millions of them. You're going to, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, you're going to see Stepford Wives for fill in the blank. Stepford Wives for Walker, for instance. Trust me. I got to get out of here. We're right up against it. Thanks, Flavio. Have a wonderful evening.
You have a very lovely evening.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from Scott Walker stand, that's our buddy Flavio. And a lovely conversation it was. Time to get out of here. Thanks. Thanks to Ed, and thanks to Mark for jumping in and helping us get ever so much closer to our goal. We got $35 to go to finish off the week and hopefully get started on the next one. Okie dokie, okie dokie. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to all of you who keep this program going. Thank you to all of you who spend your precious finite time listening to it. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.